As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
You're listening to Why Always Us, a Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm David Mooney. I'm joined this week by Sam Lee.
Hello.
Hi, Sam. Welcome back. How are you doing?
Yeah, all good, thanks. Thank you.
Good, good. Good week off?
Yeah, fine. Yeah. I did, halfway through, I was like, oh God, I'm missing loads here. Everything's changed. But after the game at the weekend,
Nothing has changed.
We'll get into that.
We'll get into that. And we're also joined as well this week again by Jack Pitbrook. Hi, Jack.
Hi, mate.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I can't complain. Other than the result of the weekend, I can't complain, right. Really. Well, The Athletic is available now for just £1 a week. Take a look at theathletic.com/ManCityPod to get the offer. Sam, while you've been off, you've been scheduling your recent highlights. So it seems like a good time to ask you what your favourites are.
Oh, God, favourites. The one that came to mind, even though it's not completely irrelevant now, because it'll still be relevant one day, is how they'll replace Guardiola and the kind of names in the frame for that. And we kind of use data and all kinds of stuff I don't understand, because it wasn't just me who worked on it, to later analyse the people who could replace Guardiola one day and how up to it they are and how much of a style fit there'd be in various different ways. That's an interesting one. I suppose there's the Stephen Ireland interview.
I love that one.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it was so much. I don't feel like I could take any credit for it. I just sat there for 3 hours and listened to all the great things he said. So I feel like he deserves all the credit for that. And there's just loads of stuff about, you know, Sergio Aguero, Gabriel Jesus, you know, kind of the story, really, especially Jesus. There's, I think, three things I wrote over the course of the season about how he's so hard on himself, how hard he works off the pitch, and the kind of pressing he does and that kind of thing. So those kind of things you could read as like a series, and yeah, there's plenty to get into. I think I managed to find 20 articles that I could schedule during my week off, and that's not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all. Jack, meanwhile, you've been writing about Pep Guardiola after Saturday's game, haven't you?
Yeah, so I watched the game on Saturday and wrote a piece about City and Pep and whether or not Pep can kind of build a second great team at City. I'm sure it's a topic we'll come on to later, because it's really the big question around City at the moment. And I didn't feel very confident about it on Saturday evening, I'll be honest.
Yeah, well, it's going to be an interesting discussion, and we're going to get into it. So I think let's have a look at that. But you can sign up right now for just £1 a week. Just go to theathletic.com/ManCityPod. Now, before we get into City at the moment, and especially Saturday's game, Sam, I'm gonna direct this one towards you, because an On This Day video was posted last week. That was the 2-0 win away at Leicester from the 17-18 Centurions season, and I clicked it and watched it, and like from memory, that was a really really tight game. City won it 2-0. And it was it felt like they really had to work to get it, if I remember rightly. But still watching it, City's movement was incredible. They were dragging Leicester everywhere across the pitch, and you know, just being patient but working the opportunities with some good movement and some play that stretched the game. And it just isn't like that anymore, is it? City feels so much more static in possession 2 years on.
Yeah, they're really static. Didn't they just score two really fun goals in that game as well? I remember, because obviously it's very frowned upon to, well, to celebrate in press boxes, and, you know, there's no kind of reason for me to do that watching City games. But I remember when De Bruyne scored the second, and it was from outside the box,
and he just and belted
he shifted it onto his left foot and belted it. I remember going, oh, or something like that, because it was just like, it was just fun. And the first one was that really intricate passing move where it wasn't quite like the trademark goal where they got in behind on the left, but they got in behind and squared it across. I can't remember if it was I remember Sterling was really good in the build-up. Sterling and Silva, and it might have been Jesus who finished it.
Yeah,
I didn't see the video. Okay, yeah, so there we go. And it was just, they're two examples of how City could get in behind a team with like clever, quick, incisive passing. And like, if all else fails, then somebody could just like belt it into the top corner from outside the box. And yeah, and also like, I'm not saying this is like a woe is me kind of thing, because obviously I get to go to games even now, obviously, which people would love to do, but get to go to games for free and enjoy it. But like, I'm sure people feel in a very similar situation whereby I used to have fun watching City games. And obviously like it's still like a privilege to go to the games now, but they used to be like fun to watch. And like, you'd make those noises in the press box because it was like, well, this is ridiculous. Like whether they're just hammering it in from outside the box or like carving a team apart. It was fun to watch, but now it's just so predictable, isn't it? Like, you know what they're going to do and how they're going to do it.
That's the thing, Jack. I mean, one of my biggest issues with City at the moment, I thought City were pretty good on Saturday, all told. I mean, they weren't great with the finishing, and they didn't create enough good chances to really test Lloris. But it just wasn't fun to watch, was it?
No, it wasn't fun at all, and it hasn't been for a while, really. There've been odd performances which have been great. Battering Liverpool at the end of last season, that was fun to watch. You know, the Real Madrid wins were fun to watch. But I completely agree that the overall level of City's play has got worse. They don't create as much. This is, you know, you can see this with your eyes. It's also totally borne out by the numbers. You know, City's goals, their shots, their XG, all that is miles down this year than on previous seasons. I think you're right that a lot of it is to do with movement, and City just very static at the moment. I don't think they clearly haven't replaced Leroy Sané. Even the players they do have in their front line are not as good as they used to be. You know, Aguero, Jesus, to varying extents, Mahrez arguably, Bernardo Silva certainly, and David Silva's left. So, yeah, I mean, it is what it looks like. City are just not as good to watch as they have been in the past.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the stats there. Let's have a listen to Pep Guardiola after the game, because one of the I was interested in to hear how he thought City had dominated. So this is Guardiola speaking after the Spurs game.
So the stats speak for itself. We were better in the departments, but we conceded a goal where we cannot concede, knowing exactly what happened right now, the drop from Kane and movements in behind from Song and Berwin. And we defend bad, and after we put the perfect scenario for them. So a team defends so deep and waiting your mistake, you lose your mind to use the counter-attack. In the first half, we control it well, we create chances. Enough chances considering how difficult it is for the physicality, for defending four players there. And especially after that, the holding midfielders is Rekord Højbjerg following really well the gaps between central defender and fullback. Like, defending with six in the back is not easy to attack them. And even with it, we find the moments. But the reality, we are struggling to score goals this season. But this can happen.
Now, Jack, Guardiola said the stats speak for themselves. You touched on the stats there. This is three games in a row this has happened against Spurs now. And playing against a back five is not new. Playing against a parked bus isn't new. So, like, they haven't got any answers for this at the moment.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it, that comparison between different versions of this game. So back in February, of course, City lost 2-0 at Spurs. And I did think in that game City were really unlucky. You know, they missed a penalty. They missed some great chances. Zinchenko got sent off, kind of unfortunately. And I did think that on another day, City would have won that game. Whereas I didn't really get that same feeling about it on Saturday. I thought that Saturday was more... I thought Saturday's defeat was less down to luck than the February game was. And I just don't feel like City were that unfortunate. I know City had all the ball and they got the ball in the box a few times, and, you know, maybe Diaz should have scored at the end. And yeah, Jesus, you know, on another day, maybe Laporte's goal would have stood. But I didn't feel like City were creating high quality chances against Spurs. I thought that Spurs had City more or less where they wanted them. And while City had a lot of the ball, it was possession on Mourinho's terms ultimately. And it's not a surprise they didn't do that much with it.
Yeah, I mean, Sam, a lot of people will point to this and say it was a traditional Mourinho masterclass. But, I mean, there is an element of City shooting themselves in the foot here. I mean, Mourinho can't have been planning for De Bruyne to smash a shot into Jesus, for instance.
Yeah, it's... Again, I'm doing one of these weird things where I disagree with everybody because I'm not signing up to the idea it was a Mourinho masterclass because there was... Yeah, he couldn't legislate for that. He couldn't legislate for, I don't know, the ball hitting just below Jesus's shirt, you know, before Laporte smashed it in and that kind of stuff. But at the same time, the way the game was played and how it happened, it did suit Spurs, and it blunted City, who, you know, City don't need much invitation to be blunted these days, do they?
Yeah, we've said it before. You see the result and you go, oh no, that game's gone.
Yeah, exactly. And especially, so 1-0 down. So again, in terms of the Mourinho masterclass thing, I don't fully subscribe to that. But at the end of the day, you know, he had Kane dropping off in a kind of, you know, in the way that everybody credits Guardiola with coming up with a false nine with Messi against Real Madrid. And that was because they knew the centre-backs would want to follow him and all the problems that caused, etc. You know, Kane dropping off caused City all kinds of problems. And that was, you know, that would have been something Mourinho worked on. So there is an element of that for sure. But yeah, like when Spurs went 1-0 up, City was still playing well enough. And around the time Laporte scored, but then it was ruled out, it was like, okay, it's not out of the question the City will get back into this. But then, you know, as the second half went on, and then from the second, you know, 2-0 down, you just know with this team, there's just no way City are coming back. Just no way. I remember thinking that recently. I can't even remember which game it was now, because there's been quite a few. But it was just like, I wouldn't even like the best odds. If there was to win £1 million, I wouldn't even waste a quid to put on City getting two goals back in the last 5 minutes. It's just not going to happen anymore.
That was the funny thing that the commentators were saying. You know, Spurs have conceded more than anyone else in the last 5 minutes, and literally every City fan was going, well, it doesn't matter, you know, honestly. last season though, Sam, they were missing chances. This season, they're missing chances to create chances, which is inherently worse.
Yeah, Neville kept saying, I didn't see all the commentary, but I know Neville kept saying, particularly in the first half, they just keep going, you know, they get to the box and they go sideways and they put it in. They put it in to try and cross it, but they don't really try and force the issue, which is kind of ironic, I think, because obviously with the Mahrez situation that's been going on recently and how the teammates have kind of got on his back about it a bit, it's like, you would think the solution to what Neville was saying is more players need to try and take their man on and take a chance. But I don't know, maybe there's a certain way of doing it. And I think with the Mahrez thing, it's the cutting back and, you know, taking, you know, it looks like he's going to shift inside and then put it in, but he doesn't, and they don't know whether to make the run. But it just seems like they need a bit more of forcing the issue a bit. It is all very safe, isn't it? And I'm convinced everything comes back to Guardiola trying everything in his power not to get counter-attacked on, which he's always done, but I think now it's gone to the extreme. And I think that explains why the inverted wingers play all the time, even after Marseille, when he played the wide wingers and he said, oh, you need to do this against five men defences. And it's like, yeah, but you never actually do it. And I'm convinced he still persists with it. It's because there's extra men in the middle, and if they lose the ball or if somebody else loses the ball, those wingers are inside and they're at least a physical barrier. They might not be able to put a tackle in. They might not be the best at counter-pressing, you know, if it's Mahrez or Torres or whatever. But they're there, and it might force a team to not be able to go down the middle, you know, to put the ball out wide. And I'm convinced that kind of every issue City have got and everything that Guardiola keeps trying that fans don't like, obviously he'll have his own reasons and they will make a lot of sense. But I'm convinced the answer to all of it is...
It's guarding the counter-attack, yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
He was asked about the inverted wingers. Well, he was actually asked about having two right footers on the left hand side. This is what he said:
I would say the left back we attack better than the right side. So Ferran was so good the first half, and Cancelo created two incredible three-year passes. Yeah, but Alex is now is not available, and Benjamin Mendy is still not fit like we need, and Joao is playing so good defensively, offensively. So in that terms, he's there.
Now, Jack, he either didn't understand the question or what it was getting at there, or he didn't really want to answer it, did he?
I wonder what it is.
Yeah, well, it was an interesting system, wasn't it? Because it was the kind of classic thing we've seen from City in the last few years, where Walker was kind of tucked into a back three and was barely getting up and down the outside at all because Mahrez was playing out on the right wing, whereas Cancelo was like dominating the left-hand side, almost like level with Mahrez. So it was almost like a back three and then kind of five across the middle and then a front two. So it was obviously like a system in which the right back is basically centre-back and the left back is basically a left winger. I thought Cancelo was fine. Like, I don't have much of an issue with Cancelo. I did watch the game and think, wow, City have needed a left back for years, ever since it became clear that Mendy wasn't going to be worth the money they spent on him. Why didn't they buy Sergio Reguilon? He's miles better than Cancelo, Zinchenko, Mendy, all of them put together.
Exactly. And he wasn't expensive either, was he?
Yeah. And I know that, you know, part of this is the fact that Real Madrid have got a buyback clause for Reguilon, which Spurs caved in on and allowed them to have. And maybe City, you know, maybe City wouldn't want to do a deal like that. Maybe Real Madrid wouldn't want him to go to City because they're a rival for winning the Champions League, whatever. I don't know. But it's, you know, the kind of the suggestion that City can't find another left back out there who's better than the guys that they currently have. And you watch Reguilon and you're like, God, there are actually other left-backs out there. You know what
Sam,
I mean?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at it all though, Sam, are you surprised that he hasn't, like you said about Marseille and stretching the game in that way, are you surprised he hasn't gone with a left-footer on the left-hand side, given that his at the moment, his de facto left-back is right-footed?
Yeah, I mean, you would think that would help, especially because Cancelo spent quite a lot of time in midfield, didn't he? So before the game, I was like, oh, Bernardo's going to play in that deep role, but he didn't really. It was often Cancelo. And I quite like Cancelo, just as a quick mention. I quite liked him on Saturday. He was quite good. Did a lot of different roles, which he hasn't always been able to, you know, that kind of held him back, being asked to do different roles. But yeah, you would think in terms of like having a body in the midfield, if Cancelo's in there because he's gone into midfield or just because he naturally likes to cut inside, you would think that it does give you more scope to have somebody out wide. But I think it's more the fact that you just need somebody to hold that with and actually be dangerous with it. And to, you know, especially when you're defending, when you're playing against a team that defends deep, the centre-backs and the full-backs, whatever, they can look at whoever City have got on the left when the ball goes out to them and just say, well, we don't have to close you down too much because you're not gonna do anything with that ball.
You're not gonna try to get around me, yeah.
And we'll get you. Or you're just gonna float across in. And look, at the end of the day, that will be part of the analysis. They'll say, let them cross because we'll outjump Jesus, we'll outjump Aguero, not 9 times out of 10. So I mean, yeah, it does seem like there would be an opportunity to play a left footer on the left because of that. You know, this is it. In my job, I always try to explain why Guardiola's doing it, using his own logic, not just, oh, well, you know, maybe it's because of this, it's because of that, in my opinion. This is what he's trying to do. But at the moment, like, it might be one of those things where it's just, even what he is thinking just doesn't quite add up. Like, I don't know, I'm always very conscious that he could just easily explain himself and we'd all go, okay, yeah, fine. But the fact that he doesn't just kind of leaves us to kind of deduce that, I don't know, something's not quite right. And it just isn't, like, is it? It just... When he said after that Marseille game, you need wide wingers against teams that defend deep, and it's like, well, just honestly, just do it all the time then.
And I guess the problem with the wingers then not creating the chances is that City are struggling to score goals this season. It's the worst scoring start since 2006-07, which is the infamous final Stuart Pearce 10 goals at home season, which I suspect this team is better placed to go on and do better than that team. But at this stage of the season, they're about on the same level there. This is what Pep Guardiola had to say about the fact that they're not scoring at the moment.
We are quite similar, the same the previous seasons, when we scored more than 100 goals. Of course, in the long period, we were without the strikers, but we cannot expect the strikers going to solve all the problems. So I think we create the chances. We have a counter-attack for the last pass, like we could not finish, and last control. And yeah, we could not score. So we're going to change. The moment's going to break some games, we're going to change.
Now, Jack, you something you wrote in that piece really stood out to me, and it's the comparison of numbers for the season. I mean, if they carry on scoring at this rate, they're on for, what is it, 47?
Yeah, so look, it's a small data set at this stage of the season because we've only had, I think, City played 8 Premier League games, but they are current. So you know, maybe the numbers will change, but at the moment they're on course to score, 50 Premier League goals roughly. So half of what they've done in the last 3 years in a row. Like, they are so much worse going forward than they have been in the past. And yeah, it doesn't help that Sergio Aguero has been out because he's important to them. But I think, I think often when Jesus plays up front instead of Aguero, you notice that his movement isn't good enough. He's not good enough for getting into those spaces in the box for the pullbacks or the crosses, and that's a problem. But I feel like the problem is bigger than just the Aguero Jesus issue or the fact that they don't really have a kind of top level, another top level number nine, which maybe they could do with. It's that I just feel like the team is generally a bit ponderous, a bit slow, lacking ideas, lacking control. Even when they have the ball, I don't think they're as intelligent with it as they were when David Silva was still there. And they have missed Silva quite a lot this year, probably more than they expected. And of course, Bernardo Silva's not really been the same player over the last 12 to 18 months. And that's affected them as well. So I just think, this is kind of what we're talking about at the top of the show, really, David. It's that City are just much, much less good with and without the ball than they were a year or so ago.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing, I guess, Sam, is that you look at those names that City have lost recently. They've lost Silva and his creativity. He wasn't quite at it last season anyway, but it's still a loss to the team. I think the bigger loss this season so far has been Fernandinho. The step down is when he's not been the all-action midfielder that City have needed.
Yeah, Fernandinho, obviously the same again last season, Kompany, Silva, and again, when these arguments crop up, I suddenly catch myself and think, are we being fair? You know, between the fatigue, which I don't think is the huge, I don't think it's the biggest issue in City season. I do think it's an element, but they were playing like this a lot last season anyway, so fine. And then the other one is this: it's like, can any team be expected to play so well without people like that? But then I also think, does any team have such a good squad? And I know the default reaction kind of outside City is, money, etc., etc. But never mind the money, just in terms of the quality, and the fact that a lot of Rodri was bought recently, so it's like, he's not like some relic of an old era they're trying to get a tune out of. He's been bought recently, so that should be better. Fernandinho is a loss. I almost don't need to say any. I don't need to add anything to that. It's just obvious. Like, Michael Richards was talking about it after the game, wasn't he? And he said, maybe City are getting counter-attacked on more. And they are, and I've said this about Rodri. Like, the one kind of weakness in his game he had was not knowing when to go and close a somebody down and leave a hole behind him, and those defensive actions, that was the one weakness he had. But they thought, well, he's got time to bed in. What they didn't expect was the whole pressing kind of thing would break down ahead of him and he'd have more defending to do. So his weakness is being exploited more and more. And as Michael Richards was saying the other day, Fernandinho is just better in those situations. So even if he had more defending to do, he would be better in more scenarios than Rodri is. It's just not Rodri's game. So that's a huge impact. Silva, not just because of like what he creates, but the whole kind of idea of Pauza, the article I read wrote earlier in the season. I kind of alluded again to it recently, like last week in the Bernardo Silva article I wrote about what Guardiola wants from his midfield. He doesn't have that now with Silva. He doesn't have the kind of emergency, break with hammer in case of emergency, Fernandinho option. And obviously, like the defence is getting better, obviously, but it was a huge loss without Kompany last season. So I do think it's a bit harsh to expect them to be doing the same kind of things that they were. But I also think it is entirely fair that with the players they have got,
they should be doing better.
They should be doing much better, yeah. And if they haven't got replacements, it's a bit like, after they didn't get Maguire, which Guardiola was livid about, either you stump up the money and get your best target or you work better to find a replacement. And they did work harder to find that replacement this summer in Diaz. But there is an element to it of, well, they said they didn't want a midfielder to replace David Silva. But they know how important a player like Silva is. So, yeah, there's all kinds of elements that make me think, yes, they're huge losses. But with what they've got in terms of potential to spend and players they have already got, it should be better. And I just, like I say, it just goes back to the counter-attack thing, I think.
Yeah,
that's Jack, why it's double pivots, etc.
Jack, when you hear him say that it's going to change, what do you take from that? Do you take that he's planning to look at the way that his team plays and he's going to modify it? Or does he simply think that the look is going to change and that they're going to start creating these chances again and start scoring goals again?
Well, I don't think he's going to change how the team play radically. Like, he might tweak a few things here or there, but they're not going to start, you know, hitting long diagonal balls, flicking it on for someone to run in behind. I'm sure he thinks that when you get Aguero back in the team and when the more that Torres gets settled in, then maybe City will start scoring more goals again. I do think that City's performances and results at the moment are obviously a slightly false position. Like, I do think they will improve. I don't think they're going to finish 13th or 14th or wherever they are at the moment with 50 Premier League goals. So things will improve, but I just don't, you know, I don't expect them to turn into like a regular City season, if you know what I mean. I don't think they're going to suddenly get back to the standards that we've learned to expect from the City team.
Yeah, it's interesting, Sam, I guess, because that comment, you know, it will change sort of thing. That could be as simple as actually maybe he will try putting the wingers on the natural sides for a few games.
To believe he will. I don't know. I honestly don't know. And like, I'm not sure what the tipping point would be. I'm not sure at what point he would say, actually, yeah, we need to change something now. Because it just, like, Jack's piece was great because it just spelled out clearly that they have been getting worse for a year. And I know that's like, wow, okay, that's a big statement. But they have been, haven't they? Like, last season was good, but not good enough. In terms of how they did score all those goals and did actually keep all those clean sheets, it's like, if you can tweak the other games where they didn't score four or five and they didn't keep clean sheets, then they'll be back. They will actually be back to the levels of getting 100 points or 98 points. But they haven't. They have got worse for various reasons. And look, maybe it's fatigue and maybe that's not going to get better all season because the fixture schedule doesn't lighten up. But that has been the case over the last year. They have got worse, and I'm not sure why Guardiola would suddenly go, okay, now we'll play with wide wingers. Now we'll try this. Now we'll try that. I think that he thinks the best solution for the squad they've got, the makeup of players they've got, the players they've got available, the players they haven't got available, he thinks this is the way to do it. That's what I think.
If that's true,
that's quite concerning, isn't it?
Just looking at the fixtures, though, the one thing I might say in mitigation to all of this and the position where City are at the moment, they have played Spurs, Arsenal, you know, Liverpool, these teams, and you look at what's coming up. It's Burnley, it's Fulham, you know, they've got the Manchester Derby, which is actually at the moment is quite a huge game for the two teams.
Oh, that'd be awful.
But it's
awful
like,
game.
They've been playing a lot of good teams recently as well.
Yeah,
in a prime position to. They are, but in a prime position to exploit City's weaknesses.
Yeah, but City have got weaknesses to be exploited, and everyone's exploiting them. I mean, yeah. Again, it's a bit like, oh yeah, they are missing David Silva, they are missing Fernandinho. I should remember that when I talk about this. But like,
you've got to play the hand you've dealt, though, haven't you?
Nobody was saying, oh well, they were, you know, they're playing good teams when they were battering everyone. Like, nobody says, oh yeah, well, you know, Liverpool, they are playing good teams. Like, just yeah. They're playing good teams. It goes back to what you were asking me a minute ago. You know, is Guardiola going to change, like, freshen up the ideas really and change something now? It's not like, okay, well, he tried something new and it worked, but unfortunately they were playing a good team and this was unlucky. He's just trying the same things, whether it's Sheffield United or whether it's Spurs.
Yeah.
Whether it's Liverpool. I'm not really having City are good. City should be better. Like, they've got a better manager. They've got better players.
Yeah. Now, Jack, it was we were talking on last week's show about how the defence had been dragging them through games. So I guess it was partly ironic that that 5 minutes in, they made one of the biggest howlers they've made all season. This is Guardiola speaking about those defensive errors.
They know that the defenders cannot move before the opponent take the decision. When you want to anticipate expecting the decision the opponent has not been made, you are in trouble. So defenders always have to wait what happened. We want to anticipate when situation is not necessary, and after that, Song is a special, like with Mane, with Salah. They attack between the gaps, fullback, central defenders, and the central defenders must to defend this space.
Now, Jack, we like we said last week, it's unusual for City at the moment that they made such a glaring defensive error. Where do you think that came from? Is it the fact that they aren't pressing the ball higher up, they're switching off higher up, or is it just a case of one defender had a moment?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, isn't it? So that, like, directly, that goal came because Kane pulled back into that kind of number 10 area, which he's so good at doing, and Laporte followed him, and in doing so, left the space in behind Laporte, which Son could run into and get onto Ndombele's pass. Now, this is something, you know, anyone who's watched Tottenham in the last year or so knows that this is what Kane does so well at the moment, is moving deeper, bringing centre-backs with him, creating the space which Son runs in behind into. Like, you know, that's how they beat they hammered Man United and Southampton doing this. It's how they played all season. So City should have been aware of it. Like, what Laporte should have done, I don't know. You might say he should have, if City had Fernandinho perhaps in that area, then Fernandinho could have taken care of the situation and it wouldn't have been Laporte's job. But I did generally think over the course of the game that Kane really had Laporte on toast. And like, I'm a huge Laporte fan. I think he's the second best centre-back in the Premier League, really, behind Van Dijk. I think he's been a great signing for City. But I thought Kane's movement was so good, Kane's physical strength. Every time he went like physically up against Laporte, he usually came out on top. So I just think it was an individual battle that Laporte lost. It was also, I think, just a lack of intelligence maybe, or a lack of awareness of the sort of game that Kane would want to play. But overall, with this kind of thing, like, I don't particularly want to blame the individuals. I think Laporte is a really good player. I think Diaz is a really good player. I've been really impressed with him since he came in. I think the City's problems are not so much individuals. They're bigger than that. It's clearly like the team as a whole is not functioning as well as it was in the past. And clearly the team as a whole has lost some of its dynamism, its energy, its inventiveness. It's the way they press, the way they create. Like, it's just, I think you've got to look at the collective. With this kind of thing, when a team's in a dip, you've got to look at the collective, not the individuals. And I think that the issue at the moment is with the collective. And I don't think I don't particularly want to like hammer any particular individual player, because I think a lot of the individuals, and especially Laporte and Diaz, are actually doing pretty well.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Sam, it's looking at the press. I mean, first off, I think this season's press has been slightly better than last season anyway. But I'm at a loss. When City have got so much of the ball, it seems like there's nothing there to press against, if that makes sense. If City have got 75-80% possession in a game,
right,
then you know they're not pressing the opposition. It's more that they're not finding a way through the opposition's packed defence and then leaving spaces.
It's two separate issues, isn't it? But I mean, just quickly, as we spent this whole podcast talking about your collective issues. As Jack just says, it's not really individual, it's collective. And, you know, that can seep into like confidence and belief and, you know, kind of maybe, you know, maybe they feel sorry for themselves in terms of the fatigue or whatever. Whereas, you know, Tottenham have played a game every 3 days, like all season. Like they've had like a genuinely ridiculous schedule. And if City were playing like this with that schedule, we'd be like, okay, yeah, well, it's a schedule, isn't it? But Tottenham, obviously they didn't have the shorter pre-season, but they've had things less ideal with a smaller squad than City have got. Liverpool is the obvious example because of the injuries they've got, which, you know, comparable to what City's were at the start of the season, but they're coping with them very well. You know, so in terms of like confidence and belief and stuff, it's easy to believe that, you know, they City aren't quite there at the moment in the collective. But isn't it mad? We're having this conversation. And look, maybe we're way off, but I don't think we are. But the manager just signed a new contract. And, you know, when Jack was speaking about it then, I was like, well, Jack will have seen this quite close, you know, covering Spurs, and not all the time, obviously, but quite a lot, and watching a lot of Spurs, and obviously seeing what happened with Pochettino and how great Pochettino was. But in the end, things just went stale. And it obviously, it's basically exactly a year since they made that big decision to let him go. And I'm not saying they should have let Guardiola go. I said this before when we did the podcast after the West Ham game. And I was like, the best thing they can do is keep Guardiola. And I do believe that. But isn't it mad that we're talking about all these issues? And not that it's right or wrong, but it's just at no other club would this happen. Like,
yeah.
But that's because it's Guardiola. That's because it's Guardiola. And people always say, oh, well, you know, if this was any other manager, he'd be under pressure by now. And like, yeah, that's true. But that's a bit disingenuous because this is Guardiola. And it's like, it's not like he hasn't proved himself.
Yeah, he's not any other manager.
He's not any other manager, and it's not any other club. They back him implicitly, and like rightly so. But the only thing I would add to my own opinion of, you know, keeping Guardiola is the best thing they could do is he just needs to, you know, it's not a catch-all, is it? So I actually did a podcast on Friday after, you know, obviously after the contract had been signed and before the Spurs game, and I was still kind of down on it. I was still like, well, I don't think it's going to fix everything. I was like, I might be wrong. I don't necessarily think they're going to just turn around and start blitzing teams again now. There's still a lot that needs to be fixed. And that's the issue. And it's a mad situation, isn't it, really, where we're talking about all this and the manager just signed a new contract and everyone's really happy about it. Like, it is a bit weird, isn't it? But I just want them to fix it without... I said this in the summer. Buying players is fine. Everyone does it. But they can't just limp through this season. And obviously, there was those stories last week. One, that Guardiola was going to be backed in the transfer market. And it's like, well, why didn't you back him in the summer? And the other one was, now Guardiola signed, City feel that, you know, that helps with their transfer plans because they've got the certainty there and they can say you're going to play for Guardiola. So why wasn't this sorted out in the summer? Like, what were they waiting for? Like, obviously, they were waiting for something. You know, Guardiola was waiting for something to say, okay, I'm going to stay. But what was that actually?
What's changed?
Because it's not like in the first eight games they've been... Yeah, I mean, maybe Guardiola's looked at them and he goes, God, they're knackered and they're doing absolutely all they can. And I'm convinced that when they're not knackered, they'll be fine. But it's not like they've blitzed the first eight games and he's like, okay, great, we're going to be okay here. We can go again. I don't know what anybody's seen to mean that it's dramatically different from the summer. It's really strange. And like I'm saying, they should have signed him in the summer, and I'm kind of glad for City that they have signed him now. But I don't know what's changed. Like, why didn't they just do it in the summer? And if they think, well, Guardiola being around is going to help them in the transfer market, they've cost themselves a summer of transfers. And what are they going to do now? Like, is the implication that the squad isn't there? You know, that they're not going to do anything this season. They're going to limp through the season. The other 30 games and wait to buy players in the transfer window? Oh, surely not. Like, yeah. There's got to be more to it than that, and that's what I'm looking to see, really.
I just want to read to you the opening of Jack's piece from Saturday because I think it sums up the situation perfectly. He says, Manchester City have gambled on Pep Guardiola's ability to defy gravity, but in losing 2-0 to Tottenham Hotspur on Saturday, they look like a team continuing their inexorable return to the physical earth. And I guess, Jack, the question is, I mean, it's not can Guardiola achieve what he achieved with City in 2017-19, but more can Guardiola do better with this group of players and a few fresh faces than anyone else who would have been available at the end of the season?
Yeah, exactly. And I just don't know. Like, I don't know whether Guardiola can build a second great City team, because that's what he has to do now. Like, he has to he has to build a new team, which, while different from the 2017-19 team, is capable of hitting similar heights and winning back the Premier League title. Like, that is why they've given him this contract. And I, instinctively, I'm cautious about his ability to do that, because in modern football, we haven't seen many examples of that happening. Like, the last time we saw, I mean, you know, you can look at Sir Alex Ferguson, who built three great Man United teams over the course of his time there. I mean, I feel like I shouldn't really be plugging Manchester United on this podcast, but here we are. You might, if Atletico Madrid win La Liga this year, then you might say, well, Diego Simeone won the 2013-14 title, reached two Champions League finals, and then if he wins this title with a very different team with João Felix and Luis Suarez up front, then maybe that is him him building a second great side. But generally speaking, it doesn't work like that in modern football. And I'm not... And
Have City ever had a manager that's rebuilt a side, though, and had it been successful? Well,
to be honest, I don't think, like, precedents from the ancient past are relevant, just because I think modern football is such a uniquely... incredibly distinct from how it was 20 years ago. Pochettino's Tottenham, I think, is... So two other examples I point to are Jurgen Klopp at Borussia Dortmund, obviously incredible success in the first 2 years, two Bundesliga titles, lost the 2013 Champions League final, and then couldn't really build a second great side. And his last season, his seventh season there, was a disaster. And he, you know, he was leaving that job before he wound up getting the Liverpool job a few months later. So clearly, even the best, and, you know, Klopp, I think, is obviously like a brilliant, brilliant manager. So even the best managers in the world game have a shelf life in any given job. And if you look at Pochettino at Tottenham, you know, obviously hasn't won anything compared to what Guardiola and Klopp have won, and some City fans might not like this comparison. But if you look at Pochettino at Spurs, when he got into his sixth season at the club, clearly things were going stale. He needed new players, he didn't get new players, and eventually he had to get sacked and replaced with Jose Mourinho. So there, if you have the same players, like, there is a shelf life. I think the only way that Guardiola can even begin to try and build a second great team at City is with massive turnover of players in the next 2 years. Clearly, City are in a transitional phase at the moment. I don't think the squad is disastrously bad. I think that it needs, well, they obviously need a new left back. They obviously need a new centre forward. I think they'll probably get Lionel Messi next year, although, of course, Sam will know more about this than I do. If they get Messi plus a left back plus a centre forward, plus maybe someone in midfield who is more of a kind of Fernandinho replacement than Rodri is, then maybe Pep can build a new team. But the reason I'm sceptical about this is the fact that, like, what City really are lacking is that kind of energy, dynamism, hunger, ambition. And they're going to try... Like, the team will still be pretty old next year. And they are going to need a massive turnover to be able to win back, to be able to get back to that level. And I think that even lots of the key players, I just wonder, even De Bruyne and Sterling, you know, who've obviously won two Premier League titles under Guardiola now, are they going to be as hungry in a year or two down the line? I just don't know. I think we're in a very unusual position here, like having a top team in world football, you know, going into their fifth season with Guardiola. Guardiola's never lasted more than 4 years at any other job before. I just don't know how it's going to turn out, but... And I know, you know, I've got a lot of stick of City fans in the last week or so on Twitter saying, oh, you're negative. You know, when you come to the podcast, you're not as positive as Sam is, that sort of thing. But I'm just not confident.
Negative of you.
I'm just not confident about whether or not it can work. And of course, I'd love to see it work, but who knows?
Sam, well, I mean, I guess this is a hell of a question to finish on, and I'm sorry to throw it at you like this, but what can we expect then in the next 2.5 years?
Christ. I think the reason I'm positive is because I'm very cautious of two things. I'm very aware of two things. One is that I'm quite glass half empty as a person, and I try not to be. And the other thing is, as a non-City fan, I don't feel like I can get away with necessarily saying things as negatively as sometimes I might see them due to my own personality anyway. But yeah, like at the moment, I was just thinking then as Jack was speaking, like, and before he actually mentioned that about City fans, the ones who have criticised him, what would they be thinking? And what would they be screaming at their radio or AirPods or whatever when they listen to this, like what is there that we're missing that would make that makes us think that he might not necessarily turn it around, or why is our outcast so gloomy at the moment? And it's just faith, isn't it? Like, what? Because at the moment, like I say, like at what point will Guardiola say, actually, we need to change this, we need to do something different, and it'll work? Because he hasn't so far, and he needs that. So I'm just trying to think, other than Guardiola's fantastic, and historically he's been fantastic, and in very recent history he's been fantastic, so it'll be fine. Look, maybe it'll just be the transfer market. So maybe over the next 2.5 years, it'll be fine, because they'll smash the transfer market like they did in 2017. And getting a few good players who make an instant impact. And maybe it's just as Liverpool, maybe look, Liverpool win the title this year, and then they have that dip that Liverpool did, where it's just not quite the same the year after. And it's wide open there for somebody with a boost of energy to come back. And that's when, you know, City, maybe having limped through this season, but finished in the top four, hypothetically, get a couple of new signings in. Guardiola's ready to go again.
And it's like a lit firework then at that point.
Maybe it's that, because football can change very quickly. And look, we might be doing a podcast in 3 weeks. And I was going to say, even if City do beat Olympiacos, Burnley and Fulham, I'm not going to be going overboard, to be fair. Like, yeah. I wasn't after, you know, Sheffield United and Marseille, those games that they had.
The one thing I would say as a positive is when you think back to 2016 and 2017, when Guardiola arrived at City, people were very, very quick to go in on the, oh, it's not going to work in England, when he finished his first season with nothing. And they got that transfer window spot on that summer.
Yeah.
And we saw what they could do. There's nothing to suggest that won't happen again in the next transfer, in the next summer transfer window, is there?
No, it just needs impetus, though, doesn't it? Because it seems like I said, I might be wrong, but it just seems like the confidence and the belief has been sapped out of them a bit. And, you know, and Guardiola, his mood doesn't seem to have, obviously, because they lost. But even before the game, he was saying the same kind of things as he'd been saying beforehand. So it wasn't, you know, the contract was never going to fix, you know, Guardiola's mood and the whole mood around the club. So, and that's why it's strange that he signed it now, because, you know, surely he was looking out for the response from his players, and, you know, are they ready to go again for another 2 or 3 years? And I'm not sure as a whole squad they're fully ready to do that. But I mean, look, maybe if they, well, I don't think they wanted to view it as a two-stage overhaul. I do think they wanted to do the overhaul in the summer, but maybe because of the coronavirus, maybe because of how other things have gone, they now see it as stage two. And maybe at the end of next summer's transfer window, we can say, well, they got Diaz last summer and he was good. They got Torres and he was good. Ake's been a good player. This summer they've got a centre-back and they've got a striker. And maybe if you look at it then and you say, well, last season was poor, but we've got that overhaul now and we're ready to go again. Maybe that is how things are going to turn around, and that would be, you know, that would be the more positive outcome for the next 2.5 years. I've got a feeling he'll do next season and then go. But I'm not really sure what that's based on. I don't think he'll do the 2.5, but it's a long way off. 18 months is as long as some managers get as a full tenure. You know, that's kind of the, give them a full season, see how it goes, and then give them this half of the second season to see where they are around Christmas. And that, it's such a long time. You know, that's an entire tenure. So,
and things can change quickly.
At the moment, I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm trying to think of what it might be, because I know things can change quickly in football. And I'm imagining it's going to be some kind of spark. And as much as I want Guardiola to kind of create that for himself, I think it might have to be a transfer window thing where the squad gets energised in that way.
Yeah, and ultimately, Jack, I guess, like, even if we do get a second great Guardiola City team, you know, it still might never reach the heights of 2017 to 19, because they were so unprecedentedly high.
I think that's okay, yeah, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's if we're hoping that City are going to get 100 points again, and saying that Guardiola can only be successful again if he gets 100 points, well, probably not, to be honest, just because that's such a statistically difficult thing to do. But if they can win the title back in the last 2.5 years of Guardiola's time at the club, I think that would be a big success. Like, it's quite hard to win the league. And like, the big wild card in all of this is Messi. Like, if Messi comes in, then I think both, like, I think the profile of City will change. I think the expectations will change. The way they play will be transformed. Like it's going to be a story with so many massive question marks. You know, the greatest player of all time at the age of 33, coming into the Premier League for the first time, playing, you know, leaving Barcelona for the first time, play, you know, it's going to reunite with Guardiola after, what, 9 years apart. It's going to be so incredibly different and new, and we will have never seen anything like it before, and that will just change the world. And I kind of feel like we're now assuming that Messi joins City in the summer, and I don't know that he will, but I guess he probably will. I feel like the next kind of 7 months are just really just a holding pattern until then. And then when he joins, then, you know, then we can think seriously about what next year is going to look like.
Mate, me and you have known City long enough to know that if there's one club out there that can break a combination of Guardiola and Messi, it's City.
Oh, yeah.
Right, well, that's it for this week's Why Always Us. You've been listening to Sam Lee.
Yeah, cheers, guys.
And Jack Pitbrook.
My pleasure.
And to me, David Mooney, as well. Don't forget, you can sign up right now for just £1 per week by using the code MANCITYPOD.